across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Oh, wow. It's good to have a voice again. Welcome to the state of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north on this Friday, August 4th, 65 degrees up here on the lake. On our home base, 93.5 The Tap, across the Civic Media Radio Network. Folks listening on the Shaw down in the Waukesha, Milwaukee area, you're at 63 degrees. Folks listening to the Buzz of the North in Hayward, it is 60. In Mosinee, 61. Baraboo, 67 degrees on a humid morning, but it's going to get less humid. And then we're going to get increasing chances of rain as we move through the weekend. Full update from Weatherology coming up just over an hour from now. Here's what's on tap this morning. It appears the Lock Her Up crowd is confused because apparently it's a bad and unfair thing to have political opponents face prison time if they're on your side of the political fence and possibly engaged in felonious conduct. We'll review Donald Trump's third criminal arraignment coming up. We'll also review the big budget cuts planned at one UW school. Chances are it won't be the last, given a decade of Republican attacks on public education of all types. We'll talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. Our friend Mark Jacob will be back, along with Dan Schumacher, as this is our first Friday show in 4 weeks for various reasons, so we'll catch up with some old friends. And we'll talk to somebody in Appleton about this weekend's Mile of Music, now underway. The Mile of Music is known nationwide not only as a celebration for independent, unsigned bands, but it's also well known for the tremendous support the community provides to the individual musicians struggling to make a life on the road and all that they receive from the community when they come up to the Fox Valley. Along the way, if you'd like to throw in your input, questions, comments, 844-967-2789 is the studio line, and our email address, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And those of you watching on Facebook, you can comment right there in the comment section. We'll see it, maybe put your comment up on screen. But you can also catch us live on social media through Twitter and through the Up North News YouTube page as well. Again, the usual reminder, Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media. You can find us at upnorthnewswi.com. But we are so pleased to be part of the Civic Media radio family on these weekday mornings. Aaron Zommers is down in Madison, where I would imagine it's still, it's still pretty humid down that way as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's a little gross. Not too bad, but.
And we're losing daylight rapidly. Now, I'm not going to be one of those pessimists who goes, oh my God, it's almost winter, but it is quite noticeable, you know, how you only get that brief window where it's so, I'm not going to say bright at 5 a.m., but I mean, it's, you can see everything and it's starting to slide now.
Yeah, but the plus side is it's also starting to get darker a little bit earlier, so I'm not just going to sleep during the daylight.
Well, yeah, because we now have this role where we've been going to bed when the sun is still above the horizon, and I have to admit I'm at either an age or a condition now where I used to see that as a tragedy, and I'm sure you still do as well, but now, like last night, you know, I was just completely spent. It's been a long week. I was traveling. I was sick. Finally, at like 8:05, I'd had it, and as I was pulling shut the bedroom drapes, I could see that the sun was still above the trees, and I actually counted that as a victory because I was so tired. I'm like, I'm glad I don't want to wait for the sun to go down. It is just, I'm done. Now, I've been up since 3:30 as a result, but to be able to go to bed that early when you're that tired, it doesn't matter where the sun is, honestly, at that point.
I definitely have to agree.
We also, and our curtains aren't entirely blackout curtains, and it's completely because of a laundry accident. We have these black curtains. They're not terribly heavy. They're not thin either, but they're black. They get the job done. But we washed them in the washer. We took them out of the dryer, and they'd kind of bunched up. And as we pulled them apart, you know, the outside of it, the side facing outside is kind of white. It's kind of plasticky or something. And it was peeling off. Ooh. And at first we thought, oh no, we've ruined the curtains. But as we looked at it, it actually kind of had not exactly a leopard pattern to it, but it had kind of a pattern that it actually doesn't, when you hang the curtains up, it almost looks like it was intentional, kind of like distressed jeans, you know? And so we thought, okay, well, we'll hang those up for a while. And so we've got these weirdly eccentric curtains for right now. And I thought for sure we would need like total blackout curtains to go to bed this early during the summer. But it turns out if you're tired enough, you'll drop no matter. You know, they could have been shining a light in my eyes and I still would have fallen asleep last night.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's one of those Bob Ross happy accidents.
There you go. I like that. And on top of that, the Brewers were already well ahead, and we'll have details on that coming up. In the Up North News daily newsletter, Christina Laurie has put together, thanks to Discover Wisconsin, a link answering what are the 10 most Instagrammable spots in Wisconsin. Now, a couple of them, of course, you could guess. You know, there's the Wisconsin Dells, and there's the Apostle Island Sea Caves. Aaron, you want to try to stab at one more of the most Instagrammable spots in Wisconsin?
The Giant Muskie in Hayward.
You know what? I don't think that's on the list, and it should be. You're absolutely right. So you can find out what is on the list in our newsletter. Go to upnorthnewswi.com, click newsletter in the top banner, and you will be part of that. Okay, as mentioned, Brewers update is coming up, and then more about Donald Trump's third arraignment right after this. Wherever you are across Wisconsin listening this morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back. You know, sometimes on the school menu, the cafeteria, it says cook's choice, and that's what we're doing today. It's Friday. The host has been sick most of the week, so we're just going with comfort food, which is Yacht Rock. So don't look for a common theme in bumper music today. The Milwaukee Brewers moved back into the National League Central lead with their best hitting performance of the season last night. Rookies Bryce Terang and Sal Frelick each hit three-run homers in back-to-back innings as the Brewers delivered a 14-1 blowout to the Pittsburgh Pirates. With the Cubs beating the Reds, that moves Milwaukee back atop the division, but the Cubs themselves are surging and are only 2.5 games back themselves. Colin Ray will start for the Brewers tonight against the Pirates. Meanwhile, more good news on the injury front, as Brian Anderson has been activated, and pitcher Brandon Woodruff could be on the verge of returning as early as Sunday's game against the Pirates. He has been out since April 11th. For those of you watching the World Cup for the women, first off, we don't have a lot to share with you because a lot of these games start at 2 in the morning, and we're not up yet. But I know some folks are already making plans to wake up early on Sunday morning because that's when the knockout round begins for the U.S. women. They will be matched up against Sweden. That match will start Sunday morning, 4 a.m. Central Time. And folks are not feeling great about the U.S. women right now after their performance in the opening rounds. But again, it's kind of like exhibition season, you know, it all leads up to this. What did my old friend Jim McAteer used to say? Used to quote somebody, being the big Chicago Bulls fan that he is. And he'd always talk about playoff season, like it's time to lace up the black sneakers because now we take the game seriously. So I wouldn't give up on the U.S. women just yet. And we'll find out how they do in, against Sweden as they play that tournament on the other side of things over in Australia and New Zealand. All right, time for a few headlines here. And again, if you want to react to them, if you want to vent a little about them, if you want to share what else is on your mind, give us a call at 844-967-2789. And we'll start with the headline in our story on the front page of upnorthnewswi.com. The headline says, Trump is arraigned on felony charges of trying to steal the 2020 election with help from several Wisconsin supporters. We noted that Trump flew into Washington, D.C. yesterday afternoon on his private 757 jet. Yeah, 757. We know he has that. He knows. He wants everybody to know that he has it. But honestly, do you have to use it for every trip? I mean, this is a jet that normally holds roughly 250 to 270 commercial passengers. And this time around, it's for one guy who then gets a motorcade to a federal courthouse near the U.S. Capitol. Well, Trump then entered not guilty pleas in the same courthouse where more than 1,000 of his supporters have been charged with federal crimes for their participation in the January 6th attack on the Capitol, the one that halted the certification of Joe Biden's victory the way that he had hoped. So here's what to expect in the coming days after what just took place. The special counsel's office will file court papers within a week that proposes a trial start date, and Trump's lawyers will file a scheduling motion of their own proposing delays, and then the government will file paperwork about discovery of evidence so that the disclosure of materials can begin. The parties will next meet in court to talk about this on August 28th. That's just days after the first Republican debate in Milwaukee that Trump still may or may not attend. Of course, he's leaving everybody guessing. But is the one thing you don't have to guess on, because it's in every bit of analysis about this case, is that Trump will, and his lawyers will, do everything possible to delay this case. Now, of course, in this instance, it's because of the 2024 presidential election. The more you can push this thing out, the better. But it's not really anything new. If anybody's paid any attention to Trump's many, 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 many lawsuits over the years, is that he and his attorneys are masters of delay, putting in more motions, more paperwork, more requests. Oh, I haven't hired an attorney yet licensed in that state, so I need more time. He's definitely going to do the same with this, because if a guy running for president happens to be convicted of a felony crime and is going to prison, makes it a little bit tougher for him to appeal to independent voters, shall we say. So he's looking for every reason possible to make the case right up until November of 2024 that he hasn't been convicted of anything. This is all a witch hunt. And so vote for him so we can put an end to this nightmare, because as he likes to say, he's not the one that got arrested. He says he got arrested for you, that he's taking all this rap for you, that you're the one who's actually being persecuted by the government, when that's 100% a lie. None of you, you who might be Trump supporters listening, none of you committed the crime of trying to overturn an election. Now, some of the participants in the Trump scheme, including the Wisconsin slate of fake electors, have said they believed they were simply helping Trump provide a legal backstop in case irregularities were found in how votes were cast and counted. But remember that in the wake of the immediate wake of the 2020 election, there were dozens of Trump legal challenges, and not one of them showed any significant fraud. So the fake electors scheme should have just fallen apart right there, right? Because it was just supposed to be, quote unquote, a legal backstop. But even after those challenges failed, Trump's people tried to use the fake electors paperwork as leverage to delay or upend the ceremonial counting of electoral votes during that joint session of Congress that was interrupted by the riot. Our article also serves as a reminder of other Wisconsin connections to the attack on American democracy. There's the role of Attorney James Troupas conveying to Senator Ron Johnson a request to deliver fraudulent electoral ballots to Mike Pence. There's Scott Fitzgerald's role securing state capital access for the state for the fake electors. There's Attorney Cleta Mitchell, who had to depart a Milwaukee law firm after it was discovered she was part of Trump's now infamous call to the Georgia Secretary of State. And, of course, there's Tom Tiffany's repeated efforts to stand in the way of the will of the voters. But last night, on a right-wing cable channel, a Trump attorney tried to state Trump's defense, but somehow it ended up sounding exactly like a confession. Aaron, do we have the audio of that?
Ultimately, what President Trump said is, let's go with option D. Let's just halt let's just pause the voting and allow the state legislatures to take one last look and make a determination as to whether or not the elections were handled fairly. That's constitutional law. That's not an issue of criminal activity.
No, that's actually not constitutional law. That's a confession. That's a confession that you did, in fact, try to delay the certification of votes, which you can't do. You certainly can't do without any evidence. But there, Trump's own lawyer just admits that they were trying to delay it so that they could kick things back to Republican-controlled legislatures who might do his bidding. There's no mechanism for that. You can say it's constitutional law, but that's not in the Constitution. Trump was asking Vice President Mike Pence to do something that's not there, and Pence knew so. Pence knew that this is a ceremonial role, the counting of electoral ballots. And yet, you have so many Trump supporters who still want to believe that something was stolen from them. And it seems like no matter how many times we ask them for the evidence, the only answer we keep getting back is, it's out there. You're just not seeing it. Well, we're not seeing it because it's not out there. Getting a little bit closer to home here, some disturbing news now from the University of Wisconsin campus at Oshkosh, where they have announced layoffs and furloughs because of an $18 million deficit. And of course, anybody who listens to our program regularly will understand why there is that deficit. Scores of employees will be laid off or offered early retirement deals. There will be furloughs for others, all announced by Chancellor Andrew Leavitt on Thursday. In fact, 10 of the 13 four-year campuses are facing a combined $60 million deficit by next summer. UW leaders have blamed declining enrollment, a seven-year tuition freeze that drained their reserves to deal with shortfalls, and, of course, a lack of state funding. So the plan calls for shedding around 200 staff and administrators through a combination of layoffs and early retirement buyouts. It calls for all employees to take furlough days starting this fall. The higher-paid employees will take longer furlough periods. Campus officials say they don't plan to cut any faculty positions. They want to shield students from the deficit's impact as much as possible. This is not a surprise for anybody who understands what Republican politicians have been doing to the University of Wisconsin, the crown jewel of the state's economy, since they first took control a dozen years ago. We're all familiar with the Republican politicians' attack on public schools, on public education, starting with Act 10. But when you think of the University of Wisconsin system as well, that attack on public education extends all the way up through the what they would call the PK to 16 ladder, well past 12th grade, into the 4 years of college, and even pre-K, when you see how they have rejected continuing to fund affordable childcare. So whether you're dealing with somebody who is needing childcare in pre-kindergarten, in public school, or who wants to attend one of the public universities, you have an entire political class in Wisconsin dedicated to telling you no. Dedicated to essentially motivate you to leave. And that's what we've continued to see in this state as other places like Minnesota continue to see an influx of people because they see a state that is investing in their young people, investing in education, and not focused solely on cutting taxes for the very rich, which legislators in Wisconsin continue to cling to. And if they're not clinging to tax cuts for the very rich, then they're clinging to culture war issues. And that really gets to the heart of the current funding problem with the University of Wisconsin system. We have a $7 billion budget surplus, and yet not only did the University of Wisconsin system not get a dime of an increase from Republicans, they actually put up a symbolic cut of $32 million because they didn't like the way that the UW system was devoted to diversity, equity, and inclusion to overcome racial injustice across the country and throughout the generations. We'll talk to Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil more about the Trump arraignment and more coming up right after this break. You're up north. Friday morning, it's 6:33, so that means Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil joins us now to talk about the national headlines of the week. And of course, we all know that it revolves around a courthouse right near the U.S. Capitol, scene of the crime in terms of what's being outlined for the former president of the United States. Kia Vakil, how are you?
I am well, Pat. How about yourself?
Doing well, you know, on the mend here. I'm actually going to start at the end here, because at the end of yesterday's hearing, the magistrate set a hearing date in conjunction with the judge. And all it makes me think of is Trump's dance card, his calendar is just filling up with these court dates, you know, now in Washington, Miami, New York, maybe Georgia. You know how we always talk about earned media in politics, you know, where you don't have to spend money to get publicity. I guess This is one way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, he is, you know, in 2016, he dominated the news, the campaign cycle, by just saying one extreme thing after another. And now he's being held accountable, you know, no matter what other candidates do. Like, you know, if the former president is being indicted every other week, how are you going to break through that?
Yeah, I don't doubt that. And we'll talk more about the media coverage with Mark Jacob coming up an hour from now. And I don't mean to, make light of what is an extremely serious case. Now, yesterday's case, yesterday's hearing was pretty much, you know, by the book, nothing in terms of surprises. You know, the judge reads the counts against him. But Kia, you know, as you looked at the indictment and these charges, now there's only four counts compared to what, 30 some in the one case and 40 some in the other case. But, you know, these ones really pack a punch, because it's all about trying to, you know, subvert democracy. What kind of impressions did you get reading through all of that?
Yeah. So reading the 45 page indictment, it is meticulously laid out, the way Trump tried to subvert the election and overturn it. He is charged with a conspiracy to defraud the United States, which, you know, is as bad as it sounds. And then a couple obstruction counts, or a conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, which was the certification of the results, an obstruction count for those, that same incident. And then a conspiracy against the rights of voters, essentially by trying to unconstitutionally overturn their will. And this indictment, you know, lays out what he did in several states, including Wisconsin. It lays out all the people that aided him. There are six unnamed co-conspirators. Since then, you know, it's pretty clear who those co-conspirators actually are. They include Rudy Giuliani. They include Jeffrey Clark, who was a former DOJ official. They include several, you know, of his, you know, crackpot attorneys like Sidney Powell. And the indictment is extremely thorough. It's extremely damning. And, you know, it makes very clear that Trump, you know, went to extreme lengths to illegally try to overturn the results. You know, the special counsel's office in this indictment makes clear that he had every right to file lawsuits, to challenge the results, to ask for recounts. And he did those things. But he does not have a right to try to illegally overthrow the will of the voters and basically launch a coup.
It's funny that you used the term crackpot lawyers, because that seems to have been just accepted, verbiage for describing the people he surrounded himself with. And now he's saying that because he chose to believe them, that you can't convict him because it's a First Amendment situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous. They're basically pleading insanity is the equivalent of what they're doing here. They're saying Trump was so out of his mind that he believed these lawyers who were blatant conspiracy theorists, and therefore you can't convict him because he was, you know, under the First Amendment, he was under within his rights to try to overturn an election. I'm not a lawyer. The lawyers I have read up on this in the last couple of days all seem to think that's a ridiculous argument, other than the ones who appear on Fox News, you know, who might as well not be lawyers. But yeah, that's the argument they're going with, that this is a First Amendment protection, that he just was following lawyers' advice and expressing his free speech. And that's nonsense. You know, it's one thing to say the election was stolen. You can say that, as awful as that is. But to try to actually overturn it, that's not protected by the First Amendment.
No, but Trump was asked for remarks and he said afterwards, "This is a very sad day for America. This is a persecution of a political opponent. This was never supposed to happen in America." And somewhere in the background, I can hear the echoes of 2016 and the chants of "lock her up."
Yeah, irony is officially dead. and, you know, as that's not the first time that he or his campaign have used the persecution term. You know, on Tuesday, I believe it was, after he was indicted, you saw his campaign issue a statement that he shared on Truth Social, comparing his plight to, you know, that of the Jews in Nazi Germany, which is as abhorrent a comparison as I can think of. Mm-hmm. You know, he is being prosecuted under the law that, you know, we all are, you know, supposed to abide by. He's not being gassed in chambers because of his faith. So that is just an absurd comparison. But that's what they're saying.
Do you think that the Trump's attorneys will try to call on Hunter Biden to testify? Because that seems to be seems to be the only response from his supporters is, you know, well, what about Hunter Biden?
Yeah, well, when Hunter Biden is elected president and tries to overturn an election, come talk to me then about Hunter Biden.
There you go. You know,
Hunter Biden is not in government. He has not been in government. He is the son of a president. So, yeah, he's going to get more attention and deservedly so. But, you know, it is not remotely the same. And to suggest that it just means they have literally no defense. It's all whataboutism. It's trying to make voters think that everyone is corrupt so that, oh, if Trump is corrupt, then so is everyone else. But at least he's strong. And, you know, that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, it may work, frankly, but, you know, it's up to the system to hold him accountable.
We have focused mainly on the former president. We have made reference to the crackpot attorneys. But you did a separate write-up on, you know, what one of the voices in Trump's circle was, I would say, you know, foolish enough to say out loud, although it was downright frightening. And that is a willingness to essentially use the military to put down Americans who might have protested if Trump's plot had actually started to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the most jarring details of the indictment is this portion where it talks about the person who's referred to as co-conspirator four, but is quite clearly Jeffrey Clark, who was a top Justice Department official under Trump, and who Trump wanted to appoint as the head of the DOJ, as Attorney General, acting Attorney General, in early January of 2021, because he was willing to help him overthrow the election. And, you know, that is... you know, Clark is basically quoted in this indictment as saying, you know, he wants to invoke the Insurrection Act, which is an 1807 law that allows the president to call on the military and deploy them in the streets to put down protests. You know, it has been used in the past to put down labor, you know, worker uprisings. It was used to put down the KKK. It was used to, you know, when the LA riots happened in 1992. But it's a broad law. And, you know, they almost used it to attack, basically deploy the military to attack citizens who didn't want their vote overturned. And that's downright scary.
Yeah. Again, one of those things that we were closer to having happen than most people know or want to appreciate. So when I wrote my notes down to talk to you, I wrote down, you know, how he pled, not guilty, how he pled, what he said. The interesting thing about what he said was that it was just those brief remarks on the tarmac. Unlike the last two times, he didn't try to go for, you know, the ego boost of a rally crowd. And I honestly am not really sure why, because, I mean, there's always going to be a few people, you know, that will turn up and, you know, cheer for him and everything. But it seems like, you know, even that old dog isn't hunting anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he announces a rally in the next week or so. You know, he, I, who knows why that didn't happen this week, but it's, you know, he did have a smattering of supporters show up outside the courthouse.
I wonder if the lawyers just finally said, you know, because he doesn't work off a script, of course, in these things, and that he would say something that one of the judges in his many cases now, you know, would say cross some kind of a line. I mean, he may very well be muzzled by his attorneys who are saying, you know, essentially like the old comedian Ron White line is, you have the right to remain silent, but you do not have the ability.
Yeah. I mean, that would be smart. His lawyers certainly would want him to, you know, not say anything, because when he says something, it's almost always makes their case harder or their job harder. Mm-hmm. And that's been the trend with him for years. And that's why he can't retain lawyers. He's gone through so many since leaving the White House on all these different indictments and cases against him. Because, yeah, like you said, he goes off no script and often, you know, acts based on just his own frothing ego or temper instead of what will actually help him legally.
Right. As far as Republican reaction, and again, it's not all Republicans. There are some Republicans out there being sharply critical of him. Yep. But other than former Vice President Mike Pence, who ratcheted up his remarks on Wednesday, you know, more so than he had in the past. He's still pulling some punches, but he did take it up half a notch. I'm not seeing in the immediate aftermath of this that much is going to change in terms of, no. you know, people losing their support for him. More things would have to happen for them to be openly critical of Trump, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think we saw Pence issue for him a surprisingly strong statement. And I, you know, I disagree with Mike Pence on almost everything on a personal level, but I will give him credit for that. Chris Christie issued, who's been one of the more aggressive Trump antagonists, issued a pretty scathing statement. But everyone else in the field, almost everyone else, you know, issued some mealy-mouthed response about, you know, weaponizing the Justice Department or two tiers of justice, which is frankly very ironic.
Yeah, given. Or Hunter Biden. And
yeah.
Yep.
And no, nothing's going to change because Trump has such a stranglehold over the Republican base. You know, we see these polls where anywhere between 30 to 60% of them are so loyally behind him that going, you know, full-throated attack against him is as likely to backfire as it is to help you, if not more likely. And so that's why you see folks like Ron DeSantis or Vivek Ramaswamy kind of just like struggling to come up with any response that really pleases anybody, because they're all just advancing Trump's narrative, which is why he's in first place in the field in the first place.
But this is now the third major case, along with the classified information documents at Mar-a-Lago and the hush money paid to cover up an extramarital affair so that it wouldn't become public right before the 2016 election. And there is still that Georgia case looming out there, calling and pressuring the Secretary of State to find him votes. I'm not even sure how anybody can figure out in what order these things take precedence. You know, do we anticipate in the four, I'm going to assume there's going to be four, in the four different cases that there will be this kind of, I don't know, mutual respect for, okay, you go first and then I'll go second, or do we think there might be, you know, some conflict in all this? And I granted it's speculative, but I do wonder how much things will be cooperative versus confrontational.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question that I'm wondering myself and do not have an answer to. I mean, you know, presumably these different judges will, I would assume they will likely communicate or work with each other to, or at least acknowledge, like, respect what other judges are doing before them. But it's, you know, it's pretty certain that there's going to be multiple trials next year. Some of them may bleed in 2025. I mean, there might be some happening in the weeks leading up to Election Day.
Sure.
Some of them, it's just very unclear, but, you know, it is almost certain that he's going to be facing multiple trials in an election year. And that is without precedent. And, you know, will probably not, I think it will help him in the primary because, you know, it's going to rally voters around him because he is their guy. But I, you know, contrary to what some think, I do not think being indicted is good for a presidential candidate. I do not think being charged with conspiracy to defraud the United States is going to appeal to, you know, suburban moms or, you know, most middle class voters. So I am skeptical that it will help him, but it's certainly going to be a huge story for the better part of the next year.
Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. You can read what he produces for us over at upnorthnewswi.com. Kia, thanks. Have a great weekend.
You bet.
We'll be back. You're up north.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on.
Ah, Satchmo. Louis Armstrong, born this day in 1901, passed away in 1971. But that song, one of my favorites, on my favorite soundtrack from my favorite rom-com. So, Aaron, we're going to fess up to the rom-coms or the chick flicks, as they were once denigrated as, that we like. Now, for me, that would be Sleepless in Seattle. Meg Ryan, Tom Hanks, Rosie O'Donnell. And that it's that soundtrack alone that I don't think I could recommend highly enough. It's just the music's perfect for the movie, but they're just great tunes to listen to anytime. So, Aaron, let's see. I would also throw up When Harry Met Sally, I guess, is kind of up there. What's the one I'm trying to think of? Oh, The Proposal. Sandra Bullock, Ryan Reynolds.
I've now, seen that one.
There's so many other rom-coms where I will give you the stereotypical, you know, guy rolling his eyes and going, ugh, please. But, you know, you can't paint the whole thing with a broad brush. And so what about you? If I said rom-coms that you enjoy, go.
Well, I haven't seen those first two you mentioned, though I've heard good things, and I at some point probably will. I enjoyed Love Actually. I know we've talked about that one before. I've seen plenty of them, having three sisters.
Because of The Holiday with Cameron Diaz and Jack Black and a much more extensive cast, because that's on all the time, it has started to grow on me. But I still wouldn't call myself a fan necessarily.
I know when I was younger, my older sister watched a lot of the Amanda Bynes ones, like She's the Man.
Oh, yeah. 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 She was funny. I liked her before Hollywood basically chewed her up and spit her out, which is unfortunate. All right. Birthdays today. Former President Barack Obama is 62. Meghan. Yeah, we used to know her as Meghan Markle. Now she's the Duchess of Sussex, and she is 42 years old today. And you know who's having the best 40th birthday ever today? That would be Greta Gerwig, director of the Barbie movie. Now, we talk about the Billboard charts, and there's your top 40 and such. What about the Hot 100? Where did that come from? Well, it was on this day in 1958 that Billboard magazine combined what had been an unwieldy system of five separate charts for sales, jukeboxes, DJ charts, and others, to make one master chart. So it was on this day in 1958 that they introduced the Billboard Hot 100 for the first time, and the first number one hit on the Hot 100 came from Ricky Nelson.
I used to play around with hearts, hastening at my call. But when I met that little girl, I knew that I would fall for a little fool. Oh yeah, I was a fool.
I didn't say it was going to be a blockbuster tune. It just was the very first one to be number one on the Hot 100. We'll mention another one on that same chart that day, 1958, simply because it was Bobby Darin's first big hit. It reached number three on the charts this day in 1958.
Splish, splash, I was taking a bath, long about a Saturday night.
All right, let's go up a few years here to 1972, when the soundtrack from a different movie was released, a soundtrack by Curtis Mayfield that became a soul music landmark, and that would be Superfly.
The dude Democrats have envied him for so long. Oh, Superfly, you're gonna make your fortune by and by. But if you lose, don't ask no questions.
On this day in 1984, I know we've mentioned Purple Rain many a time because it had many milestones along the way. It was on this day in 84 the Purple Rain album hit number one in the U.S. and it would stay there for 22 weeks. And on this day in 1990, Mariah Carey, then an unknown, landed her first number one hit on the Hot 100 when her debut single went to the top.
I had a vision of love, and it was all that you've given to me. I had a vision of love, and it was all that you've given me.
It was the first of 14 number one hits she would score during the decade of the 1990s. It was on this day in 1987 that the Federal Communications Commission rescinded the Fairness Doctrine during the Ronald Reagan administration, which had required that radio and television stations present controversial issues fairly. And that gets us into, you know, what has been a thorny issue for, well, ever since, even before the Fairness Doctrine was rescinded, is the amount of regulation of speech that should be done on radio and TV stations, and then later cable stations. The thinking at the time was that the radio spectrum, and all radio and TV signals are on a spectrum, that spectrum is a finite resource. And as such, it belongs to the American people. And as such, it, you know, can't just be used and abused, you know, willy-nilly, that there must be some guidelines along the way, including that radio and TV stations, and there were far fewer of them back then, but that if they are going to present controversial issues, that they must do so fairly. It doesn't say they have to take one side or the other. In a way, this is kind of a wink and a nod toward both sidesism, or at least presenting the, you know, alternative viewpoint. You know, some say, but then some other people say. We don't have that anymore, thanks to when, you know, the conservative takeover of the White House in 1980. That was scrapped. The Equal Time Doctrine was scrapped as well. And since that time, we have more media choices than ever that go beyond, you know, the broadcast spectrum, but we also have more ridiculously irresponsible presentations of controversial issues than ever before. It is completely a caveat emptor, let the buyer beware, Wild West media landscape. And if I hear anything, any single comment more than anybody else from people above a certain age, and I'd say the age now is 40 and up, it is, why can't we get back to media that we can trust? You know, when Walter Cronkite said that's the way it is, and we all believed him. Well, part of the reason is that, you know, CBS News and NBC News back then had this responsibility. It was a responsibility. It was literally a public trust to present controversial issues fairly. Whereas now, it's all the business model. It's all profit and or politically motivated to try to skew opinion rather than responsibly present an issue. Which is to say, there's still room out there in this day and age for media outlets that are, say, slightly left of center like this or slightly right of center to present controversial issues fairly, but will almost guaranteed to never get as much attention as the ones who are the real gunslingers verbally in the Wild West. More in our second hour of Up North News Radio on this Friday. We'll be back.